Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Michael's Mixdown. Michael's Mixdown is a show about music, recording history, techniques, and all things audio. And if that sounds like your jam, then come on in and jam with us today. Okay, so on this episode of Michael's Mixdown, I have Chrism with me from the band Simulacrum. Am I still saying that right?
Yeah, it's sounding very good.
Sounds good. How are you today, man?
I'm doing very well. I've been actually 2 weeks extremely busy working on a classical Baroque concert that's going to be out this Easter. And a small town here from Finland hired me to do the video and audio production for this concert. So I've been really busy working on that. And thankfully, Mr. James LeBrie is at the moment in New York with Dream Theater. So he's not busting my ass to wear our new keyboard.
Right. Good. So just, you kind of mentioned it. You do have like a production company, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's, well, we should maybe start with my band Simulacrum, because everything that I've learned in life, all the skills I've acquired, have something to do with that band. So I had to learn audio production when I was a teenager so I could record my own songs and get them into demo form. So that's where I started practicing about the age of 16 or 17. I went to study that later on. And then after that, I tried all kinds of proper schools like IT and business and stuff like that, but I dropped out from all of them and went to study media production. And this company I have is kind of a side company for me, but it's good extra money, and I get to do really cool projects. And so I went to study media production, and also I had in mind that I would like to do music videos and stuff for my band Simulacrum. So I went to study that, and I met a bunch of cool dudes there who were really interested in the movie industry. So now I have a company that does these kinds of services.
Yeah.
Mainly for the music industry here in Finland.
And what's that company called?
It's called Dark Noise Productions.
Dark Noise Productions.
So we've done actually some pretty big music videos for bands like Battle Beast and Berry and Dawn, and then Erja Lyytinen, who's a female blues guitarist who has been, she's won the best guitarist of the year many times in, I'm not sure, was it Guitar World or one of the other magazines. But some pretty big clients have emerged along the years.
So I do want to ask you a few questions about the band. There's two lead singers, and I wanted to know what some of like the pros and cons to having two lead singers, because I would found myself asking, like, do they record in the studio at the same time in the same room, or do you need to get like different booths and different mic setups and, you know, face them towards each other and do it that way, or do they do separately, or how does that work?
Well, I'll start with the technical stuff then. No, they sing one at a time.
Okay.
But I do remember some sessions from this album that the other guy was in the listening room and giving tips to the guy who was recording. And then they switched and they we sort of recorded at least one or two songs like this, that they were both present the whole recording session of the song. And it was, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Sort of, it was good because they were like producing each other's vocals, getting the best out of each other. But yeah, everything's really well planned before we start recording.
Oh, sure.
So both of them know which lead parts they're singing and what type of harmonies they're singing for each other.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I would imagine with music this complex, that would be pretty much necessary to pull that off, to have some planning ahead of time like that.
But then definite other pros of having two singers is that this type of music, progressive metal, it's very hard to sing.
Yeah.
And you see lots of singers in these type of bands like struggling live, at least when they have long tours.
Yeah.
So having two singers, it even if they would be like doing a 1.5-hour show, they get to have little rests during the whole gig.
Yeah.
And then also there's two guys making the audience wild. So it's an extra guy there, sort of like get your hands up in there. And
right, yeah. Yeah, you can kind of have a singer and a front man, as it were, so one person can concentrate on doing one and one person can concentrate on doing the other.
The only con I can think is that it's like one extra guy to fly around pay for everything. But I don't know. This band, we've never really been thinking about money much. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're just having fun and we all live in the same town and we're very good friends and just making the kind of music that we love together.
Right. And I think that's actually really well reflected in the actual music, because you can just kind of tell that you guys are having fun and it's, I don't want to say it's not serious, but it's obvious that you guys are very tight and that it's a tight knit group, and this kind of music probably would not pull off as well if you guys weren't friends and didn't do this necessarily with money in mind and trying to make hits for the radio and stuff like that. You guys are making great music and we hope that they'd be hits on the radio, but I think that it's evident that the musicianship like comes first, that you guys are really concentrated on that, and that came across to me at least really evidently.
Yeah, I don't think we're making any music that we're thinking that we're trying to make a hit. We might have a plan that, okay, let's make 4 or 5 songs on this album that are really artistic, and then maybe 4 or 5 songs that would work really well live.
Yeah.
So we might have that kind of planning, but we're not going any further than that. We're not trying to mimic any other bands or try and make any hits. We're just like making music that we think would work both on an album and in a live setup.
Well, since this is kind of more of like a technical type of show about background and recording techniques and stuff, I wanted to ask you, what kind of equipment do you remember using on the record? I mean, you probably don't have it all written down in front of you, so I'm not going to be upset if you don't remember every microphone and cable and stuff like that. But do you remember some of the bigger mic choices and like some of the, I don't know if you used any outboard gear or if you're all digital, like effects, compressors, EQs and stuff like that?
I actually remember everything because I did all the sound production for this album and all the recording also. So I was almost at a burnout at the end of this process of this album because I had to do so much by myself. But if we start with the drums, quite an expensive Audix drum microphone kit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That has D2, D4, and D6 microphones, and then a couple of overheads.
Yeah.
And actually, I used the overheads from this Audix drum microphone package to record a cembalo now at the Baroque concert I was
okay.
editing, and it actually sounded very good. So they're a good set of microphones.
Yeah.
And then of course, I used some extra Shure 57s and the normal mix to sort of fill out the gaps, because Tatu has a really big drum sets. Not maybe Portnoy big, but big anyway.
Right.
So that was the drum setup. They went straight into a sound card. Guitar, it's interestingly enough, it's recorded all the amp's analog, so it's real amp.
Yeah.
We didn't do any reamping or anything on the rhythm guitar. We used an Engel amp. I can't remember the make.
Sure.
And then I set up three microphones for it. A Sennheiser 414. A Röde NT2A, and then a Shure 57.
Yeah.
And then the guitar sound you hear on the album is a blend of these three mix and going through different effect chains.
Yeah.
And I think the guitar sounds are pretty damn good.
The whole album sounds really good. I have to tell you, it's as an audio guy, I was quite pleased with the mix.
Okay, great. I used as a reference the newest Symphony X album.
Okay.
So I kind of looked at the EQ they had.
Yeah.
And then went into that direction, but didn't completely mimic it.
Yeah,
but just to see how they had balanced it out throughout the album,
right?
And the bass, I can't remember how we did that. That was maybe just like direct input,
direct in, yeah.
Yeah, and using different digital plugins.
Sure.
Vocals went through a gold mic preamp, a tube preamp, and the microphone was again the Rode NT2A, which I own a bunch of them. I find them very pleasing because they are so neutral. They're very, very flat.
Right.
So they sound exactly like the guy singing into them or whatever you record with them. So I like using those a lot.
I only have experience with the Rode NT1. Used it a few times, but I don't actually own one. So, but yeah, they are.
It's probably similar. I think the Rode NT1 is a cardioid pattern.
Yeah.
But this one, the NT2A, has switchable patterns.
Oh, yeah.
So you can use it as an omni, as a AB stereo.
Yeah.
Microphone, if you like, or then you can use it as a cardioid or even a pattern 8.
Right. Similar to the that AKG 414, right? It also has switchable patterns.
Yeah, I don't own any of those, but I know the microphone, and I've been looking at them on the internet, so maybe I will buy some at some point.
Right.
When I need an extra stereo pack. If I get more gigs like this recording classical music, then I will definitely need more.
Yeah.
More quality condenser microphones.
Yeah, and those are great, like drum overheads, or even like a choir or orchestra overheads. Those are great mics. Unfortunately, very expensive, but very good mics.
But the classical dudes, they get a lot of money. They get lots of grants from the state and like that. So they got money to pay me, and then I spend all the money on microphones.
Yeah, there you go. So you don't have to go into too much detail, because I know a lot of audio guys kind of have a secret sauce to their settings and stuff, but what are some of your like favorite plugins and stuff that you like to use, effects chains and things like that? When you, like, you can name off stuff that was off of the Genesis album, if you like.
Yeah, I have all the newest iZotope plugins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like iZotope.
Yeah, so they all, they're kind of intelligent. They are listening to each other, and you can see what's masking what. And they're really versatile. So I have the Music Production Suite 4, but during the Genesis process, I had Music Production Suite 2. So that was like, maybe Ozone 8 was used for mastering. And then Neutron, maybe 2, on sort of tracks.
Yeah.
And but mostly I use Ozone. I mean, iZotope plugins.
Right.
And then I use Steinberg Nuendo. Mm-hmm. I've got 8 as my DAW.
Okay.
And the reason why I've got Nuendo and not Cubase is because I do all this video work too. Sort of doing sound for video.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot more versatile for doing the video work.
Interesting.
And then it has all the... Actually, it has almost all the music production tools that Cubase has also.
Right.
So that's the reason why it maybe costs more. It's like Cubase, but then it's got all the video features on top of that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not actually really well versed with like Cubase. I know Pro Tools and Logic a little bit. But I know people that use Cubase and stuff, but I'm just not really familiar with it.
Yeah, I studied sound engineering when I was about 20 here at the conservatory here in Turku, Finland, where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Nuendo 3 at that time.
Yeah.
So that's maybe one of the reasons why I bought Nuendo then.
Right.
And I got the first version I bought was Nuendo 5, and I got a big discount because I was a student. So
yeah.
And I've just been like upgrading it.
Right. Yeah. I bought Pro Tools because that's what I learned where I went to school. They had Pro Tools on everything. So I just thought, well, it'd be easier than trying to learn.
All of these big softwares that have been around for a long time, they can all do the job. So
yeah.
So just stick to what you know, and isn't really any point anymore. Not at my age, I'm 37 now, to start learning new software.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that I use a lot also of the built-in plugins from Nuendo.
The stock ones.
Yeah, they're really good and lightweight. So if you have to do a little bit of EQing or compressing, they're just fine. And then and I use Isotope a lot on the group tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. The most of the built-in plugins with Pro Tools are crap. Logic has really good built-in plugins I really like, but yeah, it's good to hear that programs come with good serviceable built-in stuff.
I'm sort of happy with them, and I can get them sounding good. So
yeah, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, so maybe somebody doesn't like what they look like, or
yeah,
they're all quite neutral, so they don't colorize the sound, and that's probably what they are like in many doors.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just as expensive as some of these programs are, it would be nice to have built-in stuff that works and that sounds good and it doesn't color things, so that you can just work and not have to pay like Waves or Isotope a lot of money just to get started on a project. So,
Steinberg could give me now maybe an endorsement for this comment.
Yeah.
Making them look good compared to all the other manufacturers out there.
So speaking of doing so, like the video editing and stuff, you directed and produced the Nothing Remains video, right?
I didn't direct it, but I produced it.
Produced it, okay.
Yeah, so I have a director from my school days, Esa Jussila, and he actually... He works in the movie industry at the moment in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually just got into the newspaper because they had a DeLorean, you know, the car DeLorean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were making some kind of action movie here in Finland, sort of a semi-big budget action movie. And they were driving through a fake wall and shooting tons of smoke into the into the location, and then the fire department came there, and there came a big mess that who's going to pay for the fire department showing up. Then it wasn't their fault; they hadn't made all the permits. But anyway, yeah, I use Esa Jussila as a director, and he makes really cinematic stuff, as maybe you noticed from the Nothing Remains music video. It looks kind of like it looks almost like it could be a Netflix series.
It was, yeah. It did look really, really good, and it was interesting. Do you know, like, how, I don't know, what inspired? It was very sci-fi, kind of almost RoboCop type. If you're a listener listening now, you'll have to go look up this music video, because it's really insane how cool it looks, and this sci-fi warrior person that gets put together and goes out and shoots a bunch of people.
Yeah, the thing is with this, my company and my work relationship with Esa is that we're both sort of big fans of 80s B movies.
Yeah.
And some of the A movies too, but like Terminator and RoboCop. Yeah. So quite often, if you go through my movie catalog, you'll see different influences from different 80s movies. So now we wanted to make a RoboCop style thing. So, but we did a twist on it and had a female lead part.
Mm-hmm.
And it fitted well into the lyrics.
So, yeah.
So that's what we did, and it gives me a little moment of being able to make these kind of movies that I loved as a teenager.
Yeah. No, like I said, I picked up on the RoboCop thing, at least as an influence. So it was actually a really cool music video. A lot of music videos anymore are coming out are just like those lyric graphics types videos. There's not really much of a video going on. But yeah, the Nothing Remains video was cool. It had the sci-fi thing. You got to see the bands, so you could see a little bit of what was going on and how many people are involved and both the lead singers. So, I mean, I thought it was a great music video.
Yeah, it's kind of a cliche plot. So it's the the bad corporate guys trick this female soldier into putting her name on a paper, and then they keep upgrading her until there's nothing left of her, so nothing remains. Yeah. And then at the end, she looks in a mirror and she sees herself and what she's become, and then she strangles the guy at the end, the lead professor guy. So, but in a music video, you can't really tell a very complex story. So this is simple enough that people get it.
Yeah. No, and I really like that kind of stuff too. And I heard Arjen Lucassen once say that people said his lyrics and his stuff are cheesy. And he's like, I don't understand that. Anyway, here's a song about a barbarian and a spaceman and a hippie. So I don't have any problem with that kind of stuff at all. I really actually enjoy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the lyrics are pretty deep in that song.
Yeah.
So you can find a lot of meaning behind them. And the lyrics weren't actually written thinking about sci-fi. So they're by our bass player, Olli, so you would have to ask more about them. But they're not super easy to interpret. What's the word? Interpret.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and just to be clear, I didn't mean that the lyrics of Nothing Remains are cheesy, but I was just trying to tie the idea that even if the video might be slightly cheesy in that 80s kind of action way, that, well, Arjen said it was okay, so there's really nothing to worry about, right?
I know, but if you look at films like Aquaman and stuff like that that have these big blockbuster movies, mm-hmm. it's what lots of people want, that kind of stuff. They want the big Hollywood cheesy blockbuster movie.
Yeah.
So this was my take in the limited budget, what we could do.
Right.
But I think it turned out great.
Oh yeah, it did, for sure. It really did. So I kind of touched on like Arjen just there. And I know that you're working with James LaBrie of Dream Theater. So, I just don't want to assume what your guys's like influences are and what you guys are listening to or grew up listening to. So I'd like to hear from you what kind of bands you guys are into, what kind of material you grew up listening to. Cause I assume it was that kind of stuff, Dream Theater and Arjen and, you know, Fate's Warning and whatever else.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite kind of the driving force in this band in Simulacrum. And then in other bands like Adamantra and Eden's Curse and James LaBrie, I'm sort of more like a backseat driver. Somebody else does the songs and then I bring my own sound to it in the keyboard arrangements to make the songs as good as possible. But yeah, Simulacrum is my band, my very own band, and I compose a lot of the stuff for it. And I have to say that my early favorite bands were Dream Theater and Stratovarius.
Yeah.
So, and then Yngwie Malmsteen maybe also.
Yeah, Yngwie, yeah.
So these are the bands I was listening to about 14. I did get my first introduction to heavy metal about 13, a year back. I listened to a lot of Metallica and Megadeth.
Yeah.
So, and then Megadeth sort of won and it became one of my favorite bands. And I still like to sometimes put on a Megadeth album, like Rust in Peace.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
Yeah, classic stuff. But yeah, I have to say that Dream Theater and Stratovarius and Yngwie Malmsteen were then the best bands. And then when I grew up a little bit more, I found all other bands like Andromeda from Sweden, which you maybe haven't heard about. It's a very, very good prog metal band from the beginning of the 2000s. And then a band called Spiral Architect that was like Fate's Warning on Testosterone.
Yeah.
Didn't have any keyboards. They did one album. They were some kind of Norwegian black metal dudes who made a prog metal album. That's really, really, really sick. I think the drummer played in a band called Borknagar, and the guitarist was from Satyricon, which is actually a big band. And they did a crazy album, one album, and I really like that. And then Adagio was one of the bands I listened to. Symphony X was one of the biggest bands.
Yep, I love them.
I found them maybe when I was like 17 or something.
Yeah.
Rhapsody of Fire, if that's more power metal, but a big influence anyway. I used to listen to that. A lot of Rhapsody during when I played computer games.
Yeah.
At the end of the 90s or the beginning of the 2000s.
Right.
Yeah, but then the other guys, we have sort of overlapping musical tastes. So sort of like bass player, my little brother who's on guitar, we all listen to a lot of Dream Theater, but then lots of other stuff too. The bass player listened to stuff that was really far away from Dream Theater, like the Ramones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Funky stuff and stuff like that. And then my little brother's, he was really interested in classical music, so he listened to a lot of classical music. And then at some point, he didn't even want to play heavy metal, but I made him do it because he was my little brother.
Right.
And he was the only guitarist I had.
Yeah.
So, but now he's happy and he's really enthusiastic and he's been buying a lot of new guitar gear and he bought an 8-string guitar.
Oh, yeah.
So now he's happy that I made him continue playing electric guitar.
Right.
But then like the drummer, he's more of a Pantera dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When he joined the band, he said that he would never buy an album from this band, from Simulacrum. So he's a really direct type of dude.
Right.
Yeah. But he said that that this is really, really fun music to play. And I think he's probably like starting getting used to this kind of music. So maybe at the moment he would buy Genesis.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, slide him a copy of maybe Octavarium or something to get him started and see if he goes from there.
Yeah. I think he would probably like Symphony X more than Dream Theater, though.
Yeah. So
a little bit more trash metal in there and a bit more sort of a direct approach compared
right.
to
right. Right.
So anyway, our band's got kind of, okay, I know one dude likes Pantera, so maybe on the next album I will try and make a couple of Pantera riffs and see what I can do with them and make them sound like us.
Yeah, like I don't play, but some of my favorite riffs are just some of those like chunky, kind of simple riffs. They don't have to be really complicated to be really good. It's just sometimes, like especially Dimebag Darrell was great at writing riffs, and more often than not, they were kind of simple, or at least on the simple end, but just catchy.
Yeah, you can make a simple riff, but then you, if you want to make it proggy, you can do something fun on the drums, or then make a keyboard line that goes over on top of the riff.
Mm-hmm.
In a slightly different measure. So it has like maybe the guitars go in 4/4, but the keyboard part goes in 5/4, and then they overlap at a certain point again.
Right.
In the future. So
yeah,
you can have the simple stuff and then you can develop it so that it suits a prog metal band.
Right. Right, and I only scratched the surface on like music theory stuff. I've been trying to study and learn a little bit more, but I know what you're talking about, where those two time signatures have a common base and they'll meet up at some point and split off again, and but yeah, like I just barely scratched the surface on that stuff. I learned technical stuff, and then I've had to do all that other stuff on my own spare time. To learn about music. I am picking up a guitar sometime this summer. So hopefully I'll learn at least a little bit. I'll probably not be the next John Petrucci, but just enough to be serviceable to know some chords and new, when people start talking about time signatures and chords and stuff, I may be able to keep up with them.
Well, if you know some theory, if you study a little bit of theory before you start playing the guitar, I think it might be actually easier to learn the instrument.
Yeah.
But then, of course, there's the side of finger motorics and muscle coordination. So that's the kind of stuff you just have to put the hours into. So your fingers start moving in the way you want them to move.
Right. So in your very first album, The Master and the Simulacrum, you had the Genesis Part 1, The Celestial Architect. What made you want to revisit that in 2021 and then have the other parts on this album, Genesis?
Well, it reads already on the first album, it says Genesis Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
So I already then, I composed it when I was 18. And I sort of left the end open. So there's this rising keyboard pattern, and then it ends into a chord, but I left the chord. I didn't play the chord onto the song on the album. So I always thought that the next song, the next part would start from that chord.
Right.
So now finally I decided that I would make the following parts, and I was going to make three parts, but then somewhere along the way I decided to make the piano part, Genesis Part 3. So
mm-hmm.
I decided the song needed a breather.
Right. So yeah,
I made just like a piano vocal track.
Right. Yeah, and I read a few reviews and a lot of people touched on that it was nice to break up like a 30-ish minute piece with a little kind of a breather before finishing off strong. So yeah, it was a nice touch, and other people have definitely picked up on that. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Dream Theater doing Metropolis Part 1 and then coming back, you know, years later to do Part 2 and expand on it. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the original plan was, I think, that I would have started the second album with Part 2,
mm-hmm.
and ended it off with Part 3, and then started again the next album with Part 4. So you could have like put the different track from each album, sort of put them in Spotify into a playlist, and then you could have listened to the whole thing. The sound quality difference was just too much of what I did in 2012 and what I'm capable of doing now.
Yeah.
So we decided that we'll do a re-recording of the first part and then record the following parts. also.
Right. So as far as that part one goes, were there any major differences? Did you take the opportunity to change any of the writing, or is it basically just a piece for piece re-record, but with more modern technology and more experience on your end?
Well, yeah, well, the sound quality is a lot better. Niklas sings a lot better, the vocalist, who was also present on the first album. Mm-hmm. He's like now, I think he's 34 years old at the moment. So he's kind of like in his prime as a vocalist. Mm. So, yeah, he sings a lot better. And then we have a new drummer, Tatu. So the drums are, he brings his own touch to the drums.
Right.
So some parts it plays the same and some parts it plays a little different. But then me and my little brother who plays guitar, we played quite the same as we did on the first album. And right. I actually used some of the keyboard takes from the first album because I kind of wanted to keep it as close as possible.
Yeah.
To what I did back then. And then also the song is a journey that the last song I composed right at the end. So it's kind of a journey from when I was 20 to when I was 36 or something. So
yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Especially because, like I said, with added experience and time, you can kind of grow and change from that part one to the part four. There's kind of there's kind of a neat progression, not only just from song to song, but also if you're listening to this now and you go back and listen to it, you realize that there's a progression from that song being released in 2012 and then going to now to 2021.
Yeah, it's also a life journey and how I've evolved as a composer. It was pretty hard trying to get into the same mindset that you had when you were 20, when I started composing part two.
Right. So,
but I think it came out pretty cool.
Oh, it really, I dig those big epic, you know, 20, 30 plus minute tracks. And this one's split up into four parts, but it's meant to be enjoyed as one piece, correct?
Yeah, but that's maybe the best way to enjoy the songs. But right at the beginning, I had the idea that I want to compose the songs that they flow well into each other, mm-hmm. but then they can be listened separately also. Right. So if you're in a moody feel, you can listen to the part three just on its own.
Mm.
You don't have to listen to all the other parts either. You can just put part three playing and it sounds like a song. It
doesn't
sound like it is missing something.
So you've got your other upcoming projects also I wanted to touch on because Eden's Curse is coming back and you're involved in the new James LaBrie solo album. So obviously those things are coming up. So there's things that you can't reveal, I understand. So whatever you want to touch on or whatever you want to talk about is cool with me. But I'd like to know a little bit more about those things if you're at liberty to say.
Yeah, well, sure. I can talk about all the stuff that's about to be released. When this COVID situation hit the world, I was pretty damn depressed.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of gigs and stuff. But then in the end, 2020 ended up being a really active year for me because I was all the time recording stuff at home. And the first thing I did was an album for a band called True Cult Club, which is sort of, it's a weird band. It's sort of like a mix of Infected Mushroom, if you know the Israeli and sort of
I know the name anyway.
Techno machine music band. It's a duo, but really artistic machine music.
Mm-hmm.
And then mix of that and Rammstein. And then it has, of course, a few prog elements in it also, but not very many. And that band has members from, yeah, Stratovarius's drummer, and Wintersun's guitar player sings vocals. So they're pretty established musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And we've released 4 songs now, but I've recorded a full album. So let's see what will happen with that. But will that be released anytime soon? So that was True Cult Club. Then I'm finishing off a band called Adamantra. I have 2 more songs to record on that album. And then that'll come at some point. That's kind of like the Symphony X of Finland. So that's
okay.
That's very Symphony X style. The band has 2 albums and they're very professional also. So I've been a long time in that band also. But it's more of a hobby project, but they're good friends of mine. They all live in the main capital, Helsinki.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, then when I finished the True Cult Club album, I got asked to play the new James LaBrie album. So I, of course, had to say yes to that.
Yeah.
Paul from Eden's Curse is writing the songs.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's going to be like, it's going to be an acoustic album, but it's got a lot of power to it. So there's James LaBrie's son, Chance LaBrie, is playing drums. It's going to be like heavily played acoustic guitars with heavy style drum comping on top of it. And then big keyboards like big Hammonds and Rhodes, and
yeah,
try to keep it quite 70s because the goal is to make music that sounds like the bands James loved when he was a teenager by himself.
Okay.
So Rush and Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple and maybe some Pink Floyd in there. So there's some softer and moodier songs in there, but then there's songs that sound huge, even if they are kind of acoustic and analog. Yeah. And Marcos Fogli is playing the guitar leads, which I'm really enthusiastic about also. It's a really great guitar player. And the vocals I've heard from James, they sound really very, very good. They sound as good as when he was a young man, and really, really good.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's probably all I can tell about that project.
Sure. All right.
Yeah. Then there's when we finish the James LaBrie album, we'll start doing some new Eden's Curse songs. So.
Good.
So I've got a lot going on and a lot coming out. So,
well, it's good to be busy as a musician, right?
There's a lot people can listen if your listeners want to take a listen of what my keyboard sound like. There's 6 albums on Spotify at the moment where I play.
Yeah. So the last Eden's Curse album, when did that come out? 2015, 2016, I want to say. Or was it a little? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had quite a few of that songs off that album rotating on my playlist on Spotify that I listen to all the time. I was actually a pretty big fan of that album.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the album, Cardinal. And that album took me into many places. It took me on a big tour in Germany with Freedom Call. And that was really fun. We had a really cool big bus, and that was kind of my first big tour outside of Finland. And then it also took me to the UK into really big venues. We played with Michael Schenker Fest. Mm-hmm. And it's an important band for me and an important album.
Yeah, so Eden's Curse and Simulacrum are both on Spotify, and hopefully very soon we'll be hearing James LaBrie's new solo album, which I have no doubt will be on Spotify. His other solo albums are on there. And
Yeah, we'll see. I don't have any idea about when that's going to be released.
Right. Yeah, I hadn't heard anything either.
Yeah. But I'm also looking forward to getting that out. I still have a few songs to do, but it's sounding really, really good at the moment. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, it's very good to hear. I think 2021 is going to be a good year for metal and prog metal heads all over the world. Because we've got a new Transatlantic album came out, Liquid Tension Experiment's got an album coming out, Dream Theater may have an album out in September, is what the last thing I heard was maybe fall, maybe September this year. So a lot of good music coming out.
I think they're in the studio at the moment in New York making this new Dream Theater album.
So, yeah.
So that gives me a breather. Next week I'll start recording again for James.
Okay. So
I'll finish a song that's been in the works for a while and send it off, see what he thinks about it.
So are you like recording keyboards at home, or are you still going to the studio? With COVID, everything's different now. So,
I built a studio at home that has everything I need, so I can work here.
Yeah.
Usually, I always work at home, but sometimes I visited also outside studios. So, if you we have a cool music video, a live played music video with True Cult Club called Saeed. It's actually an infected mushroom cover, but you can't really hear the original song much in it. So it's a very original cover. And we do that at Sonic Pump Studios in Helsinki. So
okay.
That's one of the main studios here in Finland.
That's very cool.
But yeah, mostly I just record at home. I have two Roland keyboards here. I have one analog keyboard and one fully weighted 88 keys master keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like most everything you need right there, right?
Yeah. And I have good speakers, and I have a good sound card, and I have everything I need here at home. So this is where I mostly do my keyboard work.
Right. And I think COVID drove a lot of people to work at home too, or to build home studios so they could work at home. I obviously do all my recording for the podcast here in my home. Once in a blue moon, I might take the portable rig somewhere, but pretty much everything has been done here right in this room. So,
yeah, it's a lot cheaper now than it was 30 years ago or 20 years. So,
Yeah, because you can get a serviceable mic for, you know, around $100, and you can start buying some software, or like there's some free and or cheap DAWs out there that you can work with. Most people can get by starting off with something free like Audacity, and then once they get a little more proficient, they can move up to something like Reaper or Logic or Cubase or whatever else. Pro Tools is kind of has a steep learning curve for people that have never messed with software before, but it's really approachable nowadays, especially with YouTube and shows like mine. There's tons of stuff. If you go look at like the recommended stuff, like if you look up Michael's Mixdown on Spotify, there's other shows normally that pop up under it, and then there's tons of shows people talking about music and production and how they did this and that, and talking to music talent and bands and stuff about behind the scenes things. So it's really more approachable now to record at home and to teach.
Yeah, and it's also great, all that stuff, because people can get closer to let's say the rock stars or the producers. Because they're posting stuff online all the time, and they're on social media, and they answer your questions, and they're not as far away as they were when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And also, the good thing is that if I have a problem, like a problem I have is that I use DaVinci Resolve for video editing. And it takes like 17 minutes to boot up. Mm-hmm. So I can just go on YouTube and try and find someone with the same problem and then maybe find a solution to it.
Right. Yeah.
Or if I want to learn more about compression, mm-hmm. then I can just type it in and there'll come maybe 50 videos of professionals talking about it.
Yep. And I've done a lot of that. And there's guys that post fairly frequently, like Dave Pensado and Rick Beato, both talk a lot about like technical stuff if you want to learn more. So it's out there and it's easy to get.
Yeah.
But I think I've probably taken up enough of your time today. Especially with some glitches on my end at the beginning. But yeah, I really appreciate you coming on to talk to me and to talk about, you know, nerdy audio stuff, because there's not a whole lot of that around here. When I start talking about microphones and plugins and people just go to sleep on me, and they're no interest in talking about it.
That's fine. It was a nice chat, even if nobody would be listening.
Right. Yeah. Well, I hope a few people will listen. We're going to try to get this on like that Dream Theater Facebook group and some other places, and hopefully find some people that are actually interested in listening. I know a few podcast people are like, I got to get so many listens or I'm not even going to do it. And I'm like, I would rather people actually want to listen to this material, and people that are actually interested in the people that I'm talking to, like you. Than to try to push this into some kind of group where they just listen for the sake of listening to podcasts to get people's numbers up or whatever.
Well, there's definitely so many people in the world that there are people who would be interested in this. There'll be tons of people who would be interested in listening to this nerdy stuff, but people have so short attention span nowadays that it's hard to get people to listen past the beginning of the stream.
Right. My goal is to normally have a little bit shorter episodes. I've done a few interviews now, and they're normally, you know, somewhere in the hour, an hour and a half. And then sometimes I'll do deep dives into albums, like I did Scenes from a Memory, and that one was about almost an hour and a half. And then I try to break that up with like shorter episodes where I just talk about like one song. Like I just did a couple episodes ago, In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. And I just talked about that and a cover version of it and kind of like compared and contrasted. And those episodes tend to be like 20 to 30 minutes long. So, I think the average person that's listening to a podcast is looking somewhere for like a 30 to maybe an hour and a half time frame. And then people that are like watching YouTube videos normally want something shorter than that. So
yeah,
I try to stay in that kind of pocket and keep people interested anyway. If it was 3 hours long, I don't think anybody would listen to it.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you on my end for having me rambling on.
My pleasure.
On your show. And is there something else you would like to ask from me?
No, just that you stay well out there. COVID is hopefully coming to an end this year. The vaccines are rolling out. Here where I live, pretty much everybody is going to be eligible for a vaccine here in the next month or so. Today they just did 16 years and older is eligible. So
okay. Here in Finland they're still doing like 65 year plus.
Yeah,
but we only have 5.5 million, so if they get enough vaccines here into Finland, then it's going to be pretty fast, vaccinating everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that probably I'll get my vaccination probably during the summer, but let's see.
Yeah. Well, yeah, stay well out there until the vaccines are rolling out, and then hopefully we can all kind of get back to normal and have live shows and go to concerts again. Like the last show I went to was when Dream Theater was in town, actually. It was the last concert I went to. So.
Yeah, I've got a couple of small festivals here in Finland in the summer. Two. But let's see, will they happen or not?
Yeah.
Right. So, but keep all of you who are listening, keep your fingers crossed that I get to play a few shows now in the summer, because I would really need it psychologically.
Well, I hope that comes to fruition and that that everybody gets to play sooner or later.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, thanks for being on the show, Chris, and thank you all for listening. And if you enjoyed this type of thing, I've got more episodes pretty much all the time in the works. So you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok sometimes. I'm pretty much at Michael's Mixdown or just Michael's Mixdown on all those things. Have you got any social media that you would like the people to find you at? Like accounts for the bands maybe, or anything like that?
If you go to www.chrism.vip, you'll find all my personal social media and also link to bands there.
Okay. Well, I will put that link down in the
episode
description so that people can find that wherever they find this episode.
Maybe you could also, like, because Simulacrum just released the album, you could put www.simulacrum.fi there also.
Okay, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Well, if this has been your jam, then I appreciate your time, and we'll see you on the next one.